I'm very happy now to welcome poets Gabe Gomez and Diane Seuss. They are both going to be reading as part of the Muse Times 2 poetry series at Collected Works Bookstore, happening this coming Sunday at 4 in the afternoon. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Hey, good to see you, or hear you.
Now, Diane is coming to us from Kalamazoo, Michigan, and Gabe is a local poet right here in Santa Fe. And I was thinking maybe each of you could start by reading a poem. Do you want to go first, Diane?
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for having me, too. I'm going to read a poem from my new collection of poems, Wolf Lake, White Gown Blown Open. And this is a pretty short poem. It's called Men Displayed the Things We Didn't Want to See. And sort of about the town where I grew up. Men displayed the things we didn't want to see, but needed to see anyway. They'd put on their work gloves and grab a bat sleeping upside down in the attic and hold it still so we'd have to look at its small eyes and fangs, its triangle ears like a little dog's, and the black fuzz on its head sticking straight up like the minister's baby who died from crib death. They'd gut a fish and cut open the egg sac, or take out their own glass eyes and roll them across the table. They'd slip out their false teeth and smile at us, or lead us down to the tracks to see the woman in the car who had been crushed by a train, or anything born with two heads or an eye in the center of its forehead, or the burned velvet curtains flapping in the wind around the black stage when the opera house burned down.
Diane Seuss from her new book. Gabe Gomez, would you like to read a poem?
Sure. This is from a new collection, not a book. Let's clarify that. But yeah, a new collection I've been working on for about 4 years or so. Anyway, this is called Ruin in My Name. If we had stayed to watch the dunes disappear or pretended to have gone to any place quieted in the outer light, the brunt of our exposition falling between the slows of eroded sledge route, words pecking sound from the ether, a past tense where order and volume is decided, or where the high rains leapt from that mountain or mass, height that was never quite as congruous to the imagined, I would have read the freshly burned truck chassis, filled in by the creases of the sand with an early vocabulary, whose flames lapped in the curvature of steel slab, never erasing, if not amplifying, the shell and exhilaration in the voices of those boys driving into the night, their faces illuminated by irradiant dials, their hard breath blooming forgiveness or regret, tuned by the trills of blistering paint that came with the twilight. I wonder about the things we would draw from them, how they left with an orchestral idea of searching, only to return with stolen trucks, stunned with their new voices born from the desert in ruin.
Gabe Gomez, from his as-yet-unpublished collection called The Seed Bank, and he also has a book that is available at Collected Works Bookstore called The Outer Bands. Now, the practice of poetry involves a lot of different things. It involves a studious, ongoing attention to craft, an observation of the real world, and an ongoing, I guess what you would have to call is keeping open one's sense of raw emotion and not doing the filtering necessarily as much as the rest of us do in our daily lives. And those are a lot of different things, and I was wondering what the practice of craft and the practice of observation and the practice of emotion, for lack of a better way of putting it, is like in each of your lives.
Mm. Great question. Gabe, do you want to start?
Sure. you know, it's you know, I like to think that everything that I do, whether it's driving to work or going for a run or reading, one of my favorite authors or whatever, feeds the poem in some way. And that eventually, if I listen closely enough to a bit of language, to a conversation that I had 12 years ago, or whatever it is that sort of happens to cross my mind, then the poem will sort of erupt or begin from that. So I think at all times, no matter how I'm interacting throughout the day and whom I'm interacting with, and I think it's just a matter of being attentive to those moments where that first line or those first two words or that little sense of rhythm that you're kind of looking for and you know, you want to shape it with words will come about. And so that's really at least how I do it. I try to make poetry into sort of like almost like a living practice, almost, you know, and just being sure to be there for those little moments where they realize themselves. So that's kind of how it works. And then sometimes, you know, having, you know, studied it formally in, you know, school and MFA and all that stuff, it's, you know, you really sort of, you have to think about it very deliberately. So there's a balance of both just the kind of the spontaneity of it all, but then at the same time, you're making art. So there's times for all of it. So the majority of it's just gathering information, and then I would say about 10% of it is just like actually putting it down, you know?
Right.
So that's how it kind of, I mean, at least for me, and how it works. And it really takes me a long time to write books or write poems. You know, my first collection took about 6 years. This collection is, you know, I've been, you know, hammering it out for the better part of 4 years. And so it takes time, at least for me.
Diane?
That's a good answer, Scott. I am with you on the notion of having to stay awake for those things that come along, whether it's a phrase or a moment of observation that opens the poem up. I feel like in my own life, I've kind of winnowed my life down to poetry as my poetry is my partner and my religion. It's who shares my bed and my house. I was a single mom for a long time, and so I had to find a way to integrate poetry into, you know, between the diaper and the chopping broccoli. And I'm a teacher, too, and so a big part of my writing practice is also my teaching practice and the way that my students' work and struggles feed back in my own. So right now I'm on sabbatical for the first time in my life, and I get to kind of live the life of a writer fully for the first time. And for me, that often involves getting myself into the natural world in some way, and being able to observe the patterns and motion of the natural world in a way that feeds back into my own work. Even if what I'm writing isn't about the natural world, that somehow seems to trigger me. And then just being human, you know, I don't elevate writing poems above any other kind of work. In fact, it's kind of lightweight compared to shoveling snow, for instance, here, or a lot of the other kinds of work that people do. It's work, and so there's that aspect of it that's just grinding it out day after day. And the other thing for me is just trying to extend what I've already done, not get too comfortable rattling my own chain. And so it's very important for me to keep growing as a writer and as a person, and they're totally intertwined.
Right before I started talking to you guys, I ran into an acquaintance of mine who's a writer, and he said, and I said I was about to interview two poets, and he said, oh, I had this most wonderful experience in high school. I hated high school. I was depressed. I was a terrible student. And we had a resident poet who was there in our school for 2 days. I got talking to this person, and it changed my life. And I wondered, for each of you, both of you involved in education, if you had some experiences or some sense of that teacher-student relationship and how poetry is affecting the lives of some of the people you come in contact with.
Sure. I mean, when I was teaching full-time, certainly one of my favorite, I think if you're a writer of any kind of, and you're teaching, you're going to be confronted with a comp class, with a composition course. And it was certainly my case, at least at the when I was teaching. And one of the coolest things that I would encounter, I would often incorporate poetry into my composition courses, and you know, as reading and other things. And you know, that's where you know these sort of freshman classes, where you get the entire cross section of a university. You know, you get the engineers, and you get the humanities majors, you get the pre-law, pre-med, and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that I was, you know, really excited about sometimes with poetry is I was teaching between 2001 and 2006 in New Orleans, and then and the rest of the time here in Santa Fe. But some of these kids that would come back from Iraq and these other places, who would, you know, literally would just be sort of thrust upon back into society and into, you know, a freshman composition classroom, and just had to deal, just had to learn to be, you know, a sort of a person again. And it was you could see the transition. It was often difficult, and sometimes you would just have to, you know, with poetry you could do a lot of different kinds of things, and you know, it doesn't have to be this sort of really super rigid rec comp structure or whatever, or it can be. But with poetry, you know, you sort of, you know, there was a few instances where some of these kids who had come back, and I say kids because these, you know, we're talking about, you know, 20-year-olds and stuff. And they would, you know, we would find a way to communicate, if ever so slightly, or successfully through poems. And I think poetry is, you know, having that, that canvas, that's such a vast and really wonderful blank canvas, that you could really sort of filter a way to, you know, get those ideas out that you want. There's order, and then there's this sort of madness behind it. And I think poetry, if you're trying to just find your grip in the world, is just a wonderful thing. And I think I really sort of was able to see that firsthand with some of these kids coming back from the war. And that's, you know, I'll never forget that. I mean, it was unbelievable. And even though it was a comp class, it was just a regular composition, you know, 101 freshman English sort of thing. And so, but it was really wonderful. It was really, and then that firsthand I thought it was a really moving experience.
Diane?
I teach only creative writing at the college where I teach. But what's amazing is that, like your friend, I was raised in a very rural area, a little high school out in the cow pasture. And a poet in residence there for a day changed my life. Conrad Hilberry is his name. He's still alive. And he said, I heard you write, and why don't you show me some of your stuff? And I had my dad's briefcase, my dad who had passed away, full of poems. And his eyes were the first that ever saw them. And we read together, and he followed through. He sent me books. He encouraged me, and he got me money to come to college. And it's the college where I now teach, in the position that he held then. And so I have a great feeling of indebtedness, and also feel that the work that I do with students is a continuation of what was given to me, which was really, I mean, the easiest way to say it, he gave me my life. I think in a lot of ways it probably would have been very, very unusual for me to have found my way out of that little town without some kind of voice outside of me saying you can do that. So that's what I try to do for the students that I work with. And not only as individuals, but I work in classes. I think of the writing class as a community, and that we're all there hoping for the best for each other as well as ourselves. And so it becomes almost an alternative way of being, a unit of measure that's very human, unlike the, you know, gigantic mass culture that they're all part of. The writing classroom is a small community. It's a small town. I could say tons more about it, but I'll stop there.
That's what an amazing story.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And he's still living. He's 82 now. And I actually teach him. I do a workshop for adults, and he takes the course. And I teach alongside him, too. So
it must be a wonderful thing for him to know that at least, and there's probably many more, but at least one person has his legacy the way that you do.
It sounds like a TV movie, but it's real. And actually, I talked to him right before you called me to let him know I was doing this. And he's quite a well-known poet nationally, but his approach to poetry has never been competitive. It's very gentle, and it's all about encouraging everyone to find that in themselves, and that's what I've tried to continue.
We're almost out of time. Maybe each of you has a very quick poem. Does either of you have a short one that we could end with, either or both of you?
Yeah, I think I have somewhere
around here. I've got shorties in here that I can read.
Okay.
You want me to start? Just
yeah,
listen.
Diane Seuss.
Okay. This is another poem from the little town where I was raised. It's called "It Was the Idea of the Calf I Loved." It was the idea of the calf I loved, and not the calf, though it licked me with its tongue covered in taste buds like barnacles. I'd sleep with my head on its warm side, pretend to sleep, pretend to like to be alone, though I wished I was in the fieldstone house with the narrow winding staircase and a spigot in the wall that gushed lemonade, playing caroms with the old folks. The calf came with a story. It had been rejected by its mother. I liked the idea of feeling sorry for it and tying orange ribbons around its ears. Its black watery eye, a planet of black water and no continents. If you sailed that sea, you'd have to sail forever. When it got the bloat and died, I invented sadness, reached down into my emptiness like a wishing well, and drew up a small wooden bucket of tears. They knocked down the lean-to with a green tractor. The calf was never mine, though I said it was.
Diane Seuss, and unfortunately we're out of time, so to hear Gabe Gomez's next poem, you'll have to go to Collected Works Bookstore on Sunday at 4 in the afternoon. It's the Muse Times 2 poetry series. Diane Seuss and Gabe Gomez, thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.